Good morning, everyone. We'll go ahead and call to order the Senate Committee on Judiciary. Thank you very much for being here. Today, we do have some work session we'll start off with for possible introduction on committee bills. We have two informational hearings we'll be doing, and hopefully we will have time to do two bills for public hearing, and more than likely, if we have all the paperwork, work sessions on those. So with that, I'll go ahead and open up the work session for the possible introduction of committee measures. Senator Thatcher.
Oh. Mr. Chair, I move the following LCs be introduced as committee bills. LC number 3395, dated January 30th, 2017. 3400, dated January 30th, 2017. LC 3402, dated January 27th, 2017. LC 3405, dated January 31st, 2017. 3407, dated January 27th, 2017. 3782, dated February 2nd, 2017. And LC 4093, dated January 25th, 2017.
Thank you. Vice Chair Thatcher moves that we introduce the LCs as committee measures, and again, those LC numbers are 3395, 3400, 3402, 3405, 3407, 3782, and 4093. Again, just remember that this is a your vote today is just to, for the introduction of the legislative concept, does not mean anything as to where you might stand in the future if and when the legislation may come forward. And that this is just basically a means to allow for legislative concepts to get into the process and be considered where they may actually actually go will be up to the president. And so with that, is there any discussion, any objection? So ordered. And we'll go ahead and close the work session on the introduction of committee measures. And we'll open up first informational hearing. And this is going to be the overview on the Oregon State Bar. And Whitney, why don't you give us a quick overview as to what, or do you want to not give any overview? You want them to give us the overview?
I want them to give you the overview.
Just checking. Just checking. All right. So Michael and Vanessa, if y'all would be willing to please come forward, and we'll let you do the overview. And thank both of you for coming in today. I know travel plans in the sense of getting down here and with the traffic and everything. And fortunately, I guess today the weather is a little bit more cooperative than it has been in previous weeks.
Thank you. Chair Przanski and members of the committee, my name is Michael Lavelle. I am the president of the Oregon State Bar for year 2017. With me is Vanessa Nordyke. She is president-elect for year 2018. We're here to talk with you and give you an overview of the Oregon State Bar. The Oregon State Bar is a public corporation and an instrumentality of the courts with approximately over 15,000 members. The Oregon State Bar has a dual mission in that it is to partner with the Oregon judiciary in making working with our judicial court systems, and also the second part is to provide service and to protect the public. In doing that, the bar licenses and disciplines lawyers and performs other functions to benefit the public and its lawyers. The OSB does not get any financial support in the form of taxpayer dollars from the general fund. It is funded entirely by membership dues. And also, in addition, various revenue from member services that we provide to the membership. The executive director slash CFO, chief financial officer, is one and the same, Helen Hirschbiel. She oversees a staff of approximately 100 people, and that does not include the professional liability fund. As to governance, We are a 19-member Board of Governors, of which four of those positions are designated for non-lawyer public members. A Board of Governors serves a four-year term, and through that course serves on various subcommittees. We have a public finance, or we have a finance committee. We have policy and governance, the public development appointee committee, and later Vanessa Dordyke will be talking about a futures task force that we have implemented. We also have a House of Delegates, which is our representative assembly of the membership. We currently have approximately 230 delegates, which we meet annually, which is for the purpose of passing policy resolutions, which these resolutions may be presented by the Board of Governors or by the members themselves. Sometimes we may convene for a special meeting, but fortunately I haven't had to have that experience over my four-year term. And I got one more year to go. there are some unique aspects about the Oregon State Bar, which makes me proud to be part of this particular bar association, which I think makes it one of the best in the country. First, it is the only bar in the country which allows public access to disciplinary complaints filed from the time the complaint is filed with the bar. This is very unique. And as I've traveled to other association meetings, we are known throughout the country for this uniqueness. And we just, over the course of the last year in reviewing our disciplinary rules, reaffirmed that commitment that we will be a transparent organization. We value that, us being allowed to be a self-governing bar. We owe that to the public, and that's how we are able to maintain that stature. We also are the only bar in the nation that requires mandatory malpractice coverage. It requires lawyers to maintain malpractice insurance, and we are able to be a self-insuring organization to provide that coverage. And it is, you know, as you can imagine, among members, sometimes it's like, why do I have to pay this? You know, it's like car insurance or health insurance. You don't want it until you need it. It is a unique benefit and specifically provides protection to the public. Also, the Oregon State Bar actively pursues public member or the public's involvement in our organization. Throughout the organization, from top, as I mentioned, from the Board of Governors to various committees, and we strive to have public member input. We seek public member volunteers. They go through a process in which we review them, and they sit on various committees, which my experience has been is rather unique in that, you know, as lawyers, we begin to think, well, as lawyers. And it's interesting to have non-lawyers sit on the same committee and that will suddenly go, the public member will raise a question and, you know, I've watched five or six lawyer faces, including myself, go, huh. That's the uniqueness of diversity in maintaining the public. So it's a valuable asset. It also gives us a direct perspective of representing the public. We're also proud to say, and we are pushing as an organization for even more, 41% of Oregon lawyers do an average of 9.2 hours of pro bono legal work. This is an important part of our organization, as will be mentioned perhaps in Ms. Nordyke's comments. One of the challenges that we face as a public and as an organization is access to justice. And so this is requiring us to, or important for us to continue to encourage our members to what I call micro-volunteer at the minimum. If you have an hour, if you have 2 hours, volunteer. And then finally, the Campaign for Equal Justice is Oregon is one of few states that has developed a nonprofit organization fundraising campaign and to raise money from the legal community for legal services to the poor. Since 1991, CEJ has raised $23 million in legal aid. This year, the goal for the annual campaign is $1.2 million. And the pleasure is that it's actually gets rather competitive between law firms and county bar associations to see who can raise the most money. So this is a very healthy competition finally among lawyers to help the public. Now at this time, I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Nordyke, and she will continue.
Thank you, Michael. Once again, my name is Vanessa Nordyke. I'm president-elect of the Oregon State Bar, proud to follow in Michael's footsteps. So I'm going to briefly touch on the future of the legal profession. I have a couple of paragraphs, so as you can imagine, this will be broad strokes, to be sure. As Michael mentioned, there is a huge access to justice problem. The American Bar Association has been studying that. You can check out the 100-page report online if you wish. I've reviewed it, and the nutshell is that we do have a huge problem in terms of the number of folks who need legal services, not just at the poverty line, but increasingly at the middle class level. And on the other side of the spectrum, we have unemployed and underemployed lawyers, particularly our recent graduates from schools. So in terms of the future of the profession, this is one of the questions that the Oregon State Bar is addressing, both through the Futures Task Force and through our various volunteer and committees and our bar staff. And also in recent years, we've seen an increase in alternative legal service providers. And you may have heard of some of them, for instance, LegalZoom, Rocket Lawyer. These are websites that folks are increasingly turning to for their legal services with a variety of results. The bar embraces new options that will eventually give legal consumers that come from alternative legal services. This past summer, our Board of Governors, which Michael and I both serve on, with the support of the Oregon Judicial Branch, have approved the creation of our Futures Task Force. And our goal is to examine how the bar can best protect the public through these rapidly evolving changes and support our lawyers' professional development at the same time in the face of this rapid evolution of the way in which legal services are delivered. Now, with the creation of this task force, we're not looking at a Band-Aid. We're not looking at short-term solutions. We're looking at long-term solutions. So that committee, that task force, is hard at work now, and I expect that they'll be reporting back to us throughout the year, including later this month. It is our hope that the task force will report back to the Board of Governors, as well as your legislature, later this year with any proposed statutory or regulatory changes that may be needed to ensure that our Oregonians are facing the highest quality of legal services possible. So while the bar is not proposing any legislation in this area, in this session, we look forward to having this important conversation in the future. As I said, this is a long-term strategy. It cannot be solved overnight. So I'd be happy to answer any questions. I'm sure my colleague would like to as well, but that is the conclusion of my testimony for today.
All right, so I'll take questions from anyone at this point. I had a comment I was going to make as well. Let me just put the comment out there since Vanessa started on it. I had the opportunity to sit down with members of the board and the bar on the futures of the task force. It's very innovative, and this is one of the things that we may want to try to schedule when we get further down in having time after we do a lot of our work. Sometimes we'll do committee hearings on issues, and I think it may be worth having a presentation in more detail of what we're doing, because this is something that is going that every state's going to be faced with, and I'm very pleased that the bar has taken the initiative that it's taken to actually be a leader in this area, because it sounds to me that we're cutting a trail that's not been cut before in other states, and making certain that you have options for individuals to get legal services, but making positively sure that they're competent and that they're not going to come back and hurt the consumer, I think is key for this legislature in conjunction with the bar. So that's my comment. Questions, I think, Senator Lithicum, and then Senator Manning.
I'm not sure that I have a real question, so this you'll find that troubling, right? In terms of comment, we've seen technology play an important role. You mentioned, for example, LegalZoom, and there's those self-help centers, there's remote technology, there's access, and the reason people are turning to those is because of the cost of having an attorney on the clock. And so you mentioned your pro bono efforts and those kinds of things. The other thing that I think complicates the issue is the legislature. We have 1,700 bills on the docket right now, and it'll be 3,200 or 3,400 before we finish this session. And as we make the law more and more complicated, people will become more and more confused and need to seek legal help, low-cost legal help, by the way, versus high cost. And I think what you were alluding to, Mr. Chair, is the need to get the Bar Association closely into a task force to help solve this problem, because it doesn't go away demographically and technologically. It's going to become a very big issue. So do you have comment? I realize you thought you were using a wide brush stroke. Well, wait, you haven't seen me yet. So do you have some comments with regard to that?
Yes. That's an excellent question, Senator Lithicum, and I would like to tie that in, your question, into what Senator Prozanski said. Currently, as Senator Prozanski had mentioned, we had met in a committee, a group of I wouldn't want to call it blue ribbon, but it was certainly people who were knowledgeable about these issues. And from that meeting, we had, as I mentioned, we had developed our futures task force right with the very first meeting. And it's our policy and our practice is to bring in a wide variety of stakeholders and looking at it from people who represent all of the numerous interests that may be impacted or need assistance in a functioning judicial system. It was quickly discovered, I think, right out of the first meeting, that the question and the challenge was too broad to do in one committee. So we broke it down into two parts. One is the regulatory task force, and then subcommittee, and the second is public policy subcommittee. And they specifically have charges in areas of, as you mentioned, the internet service. Everything is on the table, I think. I'm kind of a de facto member. I get to, as president, I get to sit in on any of the meetings I want, but I've let the minds, the great minds there, speak, and I just listen. And we're looking at working with the judiciary with a various different types of virtual forms. You know, the challenge in with providing legal services is complex, and not only does it affect marginalized individuals, but also it affects a significant impact on rural communities. And it's just by distance to travel to a court for a 15-minute hearing. You know, you travel 3 hours for a 15-minute hearing and then have the hearing postponed when you get to the courthouse door, those type of things. So long story short, we're looking at a broad range of solutions from LLT, which is the licensed legal technician, which is currently being implemented in active in the state of Washington. Again, all of these are being looked at, and as far as figuring out whether these are long-term goals. So we're looking at short-term goals and long-term goals, and very active. I believe we will have a report by June 5th, because that's been, I believe, requested of us by someone.
Follow up. Who's publishing that report?
I'm sorry. I'm not sure I understand the question.
You said we'll have a report by June.
Oh, the Oregon State Bar, the Oregon State, the Board of Governors. We will be having a report from our regulatory or from our two task force by June 5th, which will coincide with our quarterly Board of Governors meeting. So it's still in that internal process, but at least from my perspective, and I think Vanessa's, it's kind of a fast track thing. You know, it's kind of one of those things that we need to really get started, get ahead of the game as much as possible. To the extent we're already behind, you know, maybe we can make a New England Patriots fourth quarter comeback. You know, who knows?
All right.
Sure. May I just add a little further comment? You know, in addition to everything my colleague Michael here has said, you know, the rural communities is a real concern of ours. Speaking as part of the next generation of Oregon lawyers, I can tell you that a number of folks, my generation, we already do a lot of work online. We grew up in an online world. And so the increasing movement of legal services over the internet poses challenges, but it also poses potential solutions. Because as Michael mentioned, you know, especially in the outlying areas where you might be 100 miles or more away from the courthouse, getting your legal services done over the internet might not be the worst solution in the world in terms of getting legal advice. I'm proud to report the Oregon State Bar's client referral services is extremely effective in terms of generating traffic and connecting consumers with Oregon lawyers who are familiar with our legal system. And so that's one of the potential tools that folks can use to connect with lawyers who don't have a brick and mortar business right next door to them. But yeah, this is a huge undertaking on our part. We look forward to partnering with the legislature.
All right, I have Senator Manning and then Senator Dimbrough.
She just answered my question.
So Senator Dimbrough.
Well, thank you. So, you know, one of the challenges I think that we're facing, and this maybe is something we can address when we meet with the Futures Group, is, you know, access to justice for people who are new to this country, immigrants, refugees, you know, et cetera, and particularly finding representation from people who are, you know, familiar with their culture, with their language, you know, et cetera. And, you know, I know that there are people coming to this country, you know, often under very difficult circumstances, mm-hmm. who were practicing attorneys in their home country. Mm-hmm. They face a lot of barriers in being able to practice to the full extent of their profession. Is the bar looking at ways to incorporate their talents, to use their talents? Are there pathways to people who have legal backgrounds to be part of the solution here in terms of getting access to justice for people from their own communities?
Senator Dimbrough, that's an excellent question and also an excellent idea. in the context that we are looking, my mantra is inclusion, equity, and innovation. And to the extent that I cannot say that we have looked at that particular challenge, but again, it's also one that I'm going to take back and bring and mention to the task force, because we are, Oregon is, I came to Oregon in 1990. I am an immigrant. I came from the state of Montana. And you know, coming from Montana, people said, why are you going to Oregon? And I said, well, you know, it's a pretty diverse community in the state of Oregon when, you know, living in Portland. But we are now partnering, my experience as an older attorney, partnering with Vanessa and representing a younger generation. I find it's very, we said problem, I prefer to characterize it as a huge challenge. We're transitioning not only in the makeup of our communities, the complexity of the law, and as you said, communities. We have a patchwork of communities to where if we could bring individuals who know the concepts of jurisprudence to be able to understand the language and the culture and also the legal system, we need to think of ways how they can be brought into the legal system. I think that's an excellent idea, and I'll take it back to our committee, to our BOG.
In just another comment, the Professional Liability Fund provides practice management aids and advice and such, and we have posted a lot of information recently about immigration law. So for folks who are new to immigration law, who would like to perhaps assist with developments in the arena of immigration law, they can find that information available so that we can ensure protection of the public, and for anyone who's new to that practice area can jump in head first if they wish to assist.
Thank you. And just, you know, I'd be happy to continue the conversation. I'm the Senate representative on one of the governor's advocacy commissions, the one for Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders. We actually meet at the state at the bar, mm-hmm. So thank you for your hospitality.
Well, thank you.
And this is an issue we've been talking a lot about.
Okay. All right, Senator Thatcher.
Thank you. Maybe this question would be better offline, but I'll throw it out there anyway. I had a constituent call, had an attorney who apparently missed something along the way. I'm just really broad brushing here. Missed a deadline, something, mm-hmm. filing something, and he ended up losing everything mm-hmm. eventually. I mean, that's it led to that. Mm-hmm. And then he attempted to go through the PLF, and he said that it seems that the PLF is just attorneys for the attorneys, and so he wasn't able to get anywhere. What's the person's next step if they have a problem with an attorney?
Yeah. As my colleague just whispered in my ear, which she could, is the Client Assistance Fund, CAO, mm-hmm. Through the Oregon State Bar. If I understand correctly what the facts as you laid them out, one other solution is to the lawyer referral service to which could ask for a assistance of an attorney who specializes in what I would characterize as potentially malpractice. And from that, even though there is it's a reduced fee, at least the individual can get a outline or at low cost, an idea from an attorney's perspective, what the issue is, what the roadblocks, and what the procedure is. And if you would like to continue that, you know, let me know offline. Let me know.
Any other questions or comments? All right, what I'm going to do is this. Y'all just stay where you're at. I'm going to go ahead and close the overview. I'm going to go ahead and open up a public hearing on the two bills you have instead of having you bounce back and forth. Mm-hmm. And Lane is gracious enough to allow y'all to go ahead and get the bills up. So we're going to go ahead and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 490. And Whitney, why don't you give us an overview? And Amber, you're coming up.
Thank you, Chair Prezonsky, members of the committee. Senate Bill 490 changes the title of the Chief Administrative Employee of the Oregon State Bar to Chief Executive Officer. Senate Bill 490 also eliminates the requirement that ballots be mailed to members of the bar for voting and allows for imposition of a late payment penalty when a member is delinquent in payment of membership fees. Finally, Senate Bill 490 eliminates the two vice president positions of the Board of Governors and defines the role of past president of the Board of Governors. There are no amendments. There is no revenue or fiscal impact.
All right. Thank you. So just as a reminder, whoever is going to be presenting need to put your name on the record, even if you may have done it once before. For each of the bills, we'll do that. So, Amber, y'all know you've come up here first, so I'm assuming you're going to take the lead.
That's correct, Chair Prezonsky, members of the committee. I'm Amber Hollister. I'm the Oregon State Bar's General Counsel, here to provide you with an overview of Senate Bill 490. So, as Ms. Perez aptly summarized, this is essentially a housekeeping bill. It changes the title of our executive director to that of Chief Executive Officer. This is a name and title, not substance. It just acknowledges her responsibilities within the organization. It also makes some changes to the makeup of the Board of Governor, such that it eliminates the vice president's position. It's not a position that's been utilized or had any official responsibilities in the past, and so, frankly, it's superfluous. And then finally, it clarifies that the Board of Governors can set late fees for members of the bar so that we don't need to go through the additional step of taking the late fee increase to the House of Delegates. So that's it in a nutshell, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have about Senate Bill 490.
All right. Questions? Senator Thatcher.
Okay. What I'm hearing is just kind of set off alarm bells in my head, and it may not be a big deal, but you said you want to be able to just set the fees directly without going to the Board of Delegates, and that would be kind of like, in my world, the agency saying, we just want to set the fees. We won't have to go to the legislature. Can you explain?
Senator Thatcher, members of the committee, I'd be happy to do so. So the board, the Oregon State Bar is governed by the Board of Governors. There's also a statutorily created entity, the House of Delegates, which is made up of lawyer representatives from across the state. And the House of Delegates reviews all fee increases to member dues. As President Lavelle mentioned, we're a self-funded organization. So currently, whenever there is a change to any sort of penalty payment, that goes through our Board of Governors, which is an elected body. It's elected by the members. And then it also goes to the House of Delegates, which is a larger group and a larger representative body. And that process will remain identical for all regular fee setting. So the regular rate that members pay will still go through that two-step approval process. What we're requesting here is to amend Chapter 9 such that when we're talking only about a change to a late fee, it can go through a one-step process. And to be totally frank, that's not the controversial piece of all of this. Typically, members are not all that worried about where late fees are set. They're worried about the fee that's charged to the entire membership, and that process won't change.
Thank you. I didn't catch late fee on that. That's why I was like...
No, that's quite all right. Give the clarity, and that's good to put it on the record. Any other questions or comments on this one? If not, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 490 and open a work session on Senate Bill 490. And Senator Thatcher?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 490 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thatcher moves Senate Bill 490 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. And I think it's the chair's turn to carry, so the chair will carry 490. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 490, open a public hearing on Senate Bill 491. Whitney?
Thank you, Chair Prezonsky, members of the committee. Currently, Oregon law provides immunity from civil liability to various members and employers of the Oregon State Bar in relation to their work with admissions, reinstatement, and disciplinary proceedings. In 2011, the Oregon State Bar and the Oregon Supreme Court created the new lawyer mentoring program. Senate Bill 491 allows for immunity for these members or for these mentors, and it also adds immunity for work related to professional licensing requirements. Senate Bill 491 also eliminates local professional responsibility committees and vests appointment of the State Professional Responsibility Board in the Oregon Supreme Court. Finally, it provides immunity from civil liability to disciplinary monitors and allows for inclusion of a professional adjudicator on the disciplinary board. There are no amendments, there is no revenue impact, and there is a minimal fiscal impact.
All right, thank you. And Amber, are you going to take the lead again?
I am. Chair Przanski, members of the committee, Amber Hollister, Oregon State Bar General Counsel, here to talk with you about Senate Bill 491. This bill results in part from the process the bar has been undergoing for the past year or so to review its disciplinary system. Back in 2014, the Oregon Supreme Court requested that the American Bar Association come to Oregon and review our disciplinary system to look for ways to improve efficiency and transparency and protection of the public. And so we received those recommendations from the ABA, and the board decided to form a disciplinary system review committee. It did so, and it was made up of a number of representatives across the legal community. They came together and talked about the recommended changes and then made recommendations to our Board of Governors. The Board of Governors took up those recommendations, and since then, we've been looking at what sorts of regulatory changes we need to make to implement them. In part, it's going to require some statutory changes, and then we'll also require a number of changes to the Oregon Supreme Court's bar rules of procedure. So we're here today to talk to you about the legislative portion of those recommended changes. And you'll see in the bill, there is a recommendation that we amend the appointment of the State Professional Responsibility Board so that that group is appointed by the Oregon Supreme Court instead of the Board of Governors. We think this will lend that group greater independence, which is important for the functioning of the system. We're also recommending the elimination of the local professional responsibility committees. Those committees, initially, they were investigators, essentially, local investigators. And we used them traditionally to go out and find lawyers we couldn't find. Now we hire professional investigators to do that work, and it increases just efficiency and, of course, folks that are professionally trained oftentimes do a great job for us. So we'd like to eliminate those positions, and I just want to clarify on that, that the board very much values volunteers within our organization, and we continue to utilize volunteers. There's volunteers on all of our trial panels. We have public member volunteers throughout our organization, and so this shouldn't be read in any way as a statement on the importance of volunteers. Finally, the bill also updates the immunity provision that is in Chapter 9 to extend it to the bar's full regulatory responsibilities. As was mentioned earlier, we do have a new lawyer mentoring program now in Oregon. It's a mandatory program that was created by Supreme Court order. And as part of that program, the bar is required to assign mentors to new lawyers, which is a great thing. I think it improves professionalism in our legal community and helps folks get off on the right foot. But we want to make sure that that process does not expose those folks to liability. In addition, the bill makes clear that diversion monitors are covered by the immunity provision. These are folks that are identified in orders, disciplinary orders, to monitor lawyers who have been disciplined, make sure that they are staying on the straight and narrow. So that's a summary of the bill. Can I answer any questions?
Yeah. Senator Lithicum.
This bill, along with the bill we just passed to the floor, 490, both have the emergency clause in it that declared to be an emergency exists, takes effect immediately. I think, especially from the bar's perspective, this clause is getting overused. When you look at the number of bills that have been submitted And I don't have a problem with it because it really doesn't have any significant impact. And yet, deep down inside, I do. And I think it would be a courtesy to avoid using that because at some point here, my lid's going to blow and I'm going to say, I'm going to submit a minority report, which is the exact same bill, same legislation, same wording verbatim, striking Section 5, which says for the immediate preservation of life, health, and safety, because that's not a true statement. And this in 490 that we just saw, where we're coming into the new world and allowing the document to be distributed instead of mailed, that kind of language is appropriate, and yet we continually see these emergency clause language at the tail end of these. I want to make note of it because I want to, this is kind of my little red flag day. It's irrelevant here. But we ought to pay attention, and we ought to give the citizens respect with regard to how we use this emergency clause. So that's just a statement. Otherwise, I have no questions or objections.
Okay. Let me just put a couple of things on the record. Just to make it clear for those who may be listening, the State Bar did not, draft the bill. It's drafted by Legislative Council. And I'm assuming that there was a desire to have this go into effect immediately so we could actually get compliance with the changes that need to occur instead of waiting until the default date for legislation that's passed out of this session is January 1, 2018. And so the question then comes to a point of how quickly do you want a change in the statutes to go into effect? Another option that we do have the ability to do, I'm not saying we're doing it here, is to preserve that right where citizens may feel that they want to have the potential of redress and have the potential of doing a referendum, is have it scheduled to go 91 days out.
Right.
And that will give the 90 days. And I think we've not had any discussions, or at least I've not had any discussions with leadership, but I know from my own use of legislative tools, that's one that I will be looking more favorable to, just to take away this perceived conception. Because clearly, if someone really wanted to go out and get the signatures that are necessary to address this this change, I guess that's their prerogative.
Sure.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You bet. Other questions or comments? All right. Senator Thatcher.
I just had a question. Have there been cases where the disciplinary monitors or the mentors have been sued civilly? I mean, does that happen?
Senator Thatcher, members of the committee, as the bar's general counsel, I would be aware of such litigation, and I've not seen any. Certainly, there are instances where the bar or its staff are named as defendants in litigation, but I've not seen any litigation against a mentor or a diversion monitor.
Okay, and and maybe I'm misunderstanding this, but is there any change in remedy for a lawyer who has been wronged, like been brought up on whatever disciplinary issues, and perhaps they believe that was unwarranted or unjustified, and what do they do? Is there currently a remedy, and is that changed by this particular? Maybe I'm barking up the wrong tree here.
Senator Thatcher, members of the committee, this change the immunity provision wouldn't change any remedies that an Oregon lawyer had if they felt they were mistreated by the bar. They would remain the same.
Maybe a clarification here. If an attorney is brought up on disciplinary actions, there is a process and procedure for that individual to defend themselves.
That's correct.
And nothing's going to be changed under this. Sure. And so basically what I get out of this is that let's not wait until we have a mentor or a
diversion monitor.
Monitors who I assume are volunteering their time. I know I've done mentoring for one individual to wait and have them be sued because they don't think you mentored them right, the monitor does something wrong. So this seems to be making sure the umbrella that's intended to ensure those who are part of that process aren't individually sued. I mean, they could still take an action against the bar as an entity, I'm assuming, if someone thought that they had been wrong as compared to going against the individual.
Senator Prozanski, members of the committee. So the immunity provision is found in Section 3 of Senate Bill 491, and it does apply to the Oregon State Bar and its officers. The impetus for the provision was a recognition, I think, that the bar is an instrumentality of the Judicial Department forming in its carrying out that function, regulatory function on behalf of the court. As you can imagine, lawyers understand how to file lawsuits. and so this is one way that we could keep the cost to the citizens lower. Of course, as Senator Prozanski mentioned, there are due process protections built into the system for every lawyer. There are appeals that they can make to any disciplinary decision. And I believe those are adequate to protect the interests of the lawyers.
Follow on. In your language, throughout the morning, you've referred to diversion monitors. In this language here, it's disciplinary monitors. Is there a difference in what's the terminology you're referring to?
Senator Lithicum, members of the committee, thank you for pointing out that difference. I suppose I'm using the informal terminology that we use in-house. You're correct that the bill does reference disciplinary monitors. I would actually say that's a broader term. I shouldn't be creating bad legislative history by using a narrower one. Disciplinary monitors, I would say, encompasses both probation monitors, which are individuals that may be appointed under the Oregon Supreme Court's rules of procedure to monitor a lawyer who's on probation prior to the entry of any decision in a case, and also, diversion monitors, and then probation monitors on the other end after entry of a decision. So it is a broader category than just diversion monitors.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, any other questions? I'm going to ask, and this is probably more for Susan, and I know she's got her ears up. I think it would be nice if you could bring in copies of one of the most recent bar bulletins, because that you can do this online, but I think this would be something for all the members to be able to see what is going out. Toward the back of there is all of the notices of where people are being disciplined, and it goes through and gives a scenario of what the person was accused of, what the outcome is, and what the sanctions are. And so that will give you a perspective of, you know, how the bar self-polices and what is the, the process for notification. That is a public notification for everyone. So if we'll do that, I think that would be something to just give some perspective. Any other questions or comments? Not seeing any, go ahead and close.
Excuse me, Chair Prozanski, I wanted to make one clarification before I departed. I just wanted to clarify that the Legal Futures Task Force, which is President Lavelle mentioned, is doing now, it's completing its work now. They will submit their report to the Board of Governors in July of 2017, and the Board of Governors will consider those recommendations, and we expect to be able to come to the legislature with our final thoughts in the fall.
Yeah, in fact, that's one of the things when I had that opportunity to go through the meeting, that we were scoping out how much time they would need and when they could bring some finished product to us. So this will work out fine because we'll have it sometime in the fall, and that will allow us to, one, absorb it, take it in, and then what type of legislation we may need, we'll be able to start getting that drafted and move that forward so we can go to that next phase. Any other questions or comments? Thank you all very much. So I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 491, open the work session on Senate Bill 491. And Senator Thatcher, do you have?
Sure, Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 491 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thatcher moves Senate Bill 491 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussions? Any objections? So ordered. Chair will do double duty and take this one as well. That will put me ahead of everyone else, so that means I can assign more out next time. All right, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 491. And is there something else?
No.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you for taking the time to hear us.
Thank you very much. And now we're going to have our overview on the Oregon Law Commission, and we're honored to have Lane Shillerly back, and Laura Handel will be assisting. So we'll open up the overview and Lane, thank you very much for taking more time out of your professional day.
My pleasure, Mr. Chair. I learned a few things myself. And having been on the board of the Legal Aid Services of Oregon and the Oregon Law Center and a advisory member of the Campaign for Equal Justice, I enjoyed hearing the comments about access to justice, a very true need. My name is Lane Shetterly. I was here last week, and I'm back. I'm an attorney in private practice over in Dallas. Last week, I was before you in my capacity as a member of the Uniform Law Commission, which is the national organization to which Oregon belongs. Today, I am here in a different capacity with a different hat on, and that is as chair of the Oregon Law Commission. We have our own law improvement, law reform group here in Oregon. It is the Oregon Law Commission. Laura and I are going to give you a brief overview of what we do, because you will see some Oregon Law Commission bills coming through the committee this session. We just want you to understand a little bit about what we do and who we are. The Oregon Law Commission was formed in 1997 by the legislature. The legislature created it and assigned it the statutory charge of conducting a continuing program of law revision, to review statutes, to look for outdated statutory provisions, provisions that conflict with current case law that need to be updated, and to take recommendations or requests from the judiciary, from legislators, from bar members, from the public, and also from the Uniform Law Commission and other national sources to develop law reform bills for Oregon. The Law Commission is a really a stellar group. The membership is defined by statute. It consists of the Chief Justice of the Oregon Supreme Court, or the Chief's appointee, the deans of the three law schools, or their appointees, the Attorney General, or the Attorney General's designee, the Governor's designee, two members appointed by the Speaker, two members appointed by the Senate President, the chief judge of the Oregon Court of Appeals, a trial court judge, and four members appointed by the Oregon State Bar.
Three or four.
So a really strong group of leaders in all branches. We have judiciary, we have legislative, and we have executive represented on the Law Commission. It's been my pleasure to be the chair of the Law Commission since it was formed. It's a long time ago, and I'm really not anticipating being chair forever. But until I can find someone to take the job, it seems to be mine. Senator Brzezinski, of course, is a member of the commission as well by appointment of Senate President Peter Courtney. I'm there as an appointee of the House Speaker. I've been a Speaker's appointee since the commission was formed. The way we work is, as I mentioned, we have multiple inputs for projects, for requests to take things on. We have more requests than we have capacity to do. And so we have a program committee that's a standing committee of the Law Commission that receives the requests and evaluates the requests. The program committee meets with the proponents of a project, evaluates the project based on need, and also including the capacity of the commission to take the project on, and, you know, in light of the work that is already in the commission. Projects that are approved to go forward to the Law Commission are then assigned to a work group, and a work group is formed by appointment of volunteer members. As chair of the commission, I appoint the work groups, and the work groups come out of basically primarily practitioners, lawyers in Oregon, who are experts in the particular area that the project touches. For instance, in this current session, you will be getting a bill on probate modernization, modernizing our Oregon probate code. That committee consists of a couple of probate judges, some probate clerks from local courts, a couple of representatives from the Department of Justice and agencies that deal with probate estates as they come through, and then a number of private practitioners from the Oregon State Bar who practice estate law. We have a bill coming through this session on receivership. And that involves a whole different area of expertise. That work group is chaired by Judge Stephen Bouchong from Multnomah County, and it is, consists of lawyers whose specialty is in debtor and creditor law. Judge Bouchong, thank you. Judge is chair of the other group, which is the criminal appeals. Receivership is chaired by Mark Comstock, an attorney in Salem here who practices in debtor-creditor. And so what we do is we find the best lawyers, basically, who are willing to give their time to the Law Commission. And these work groups meet throughout the year on a bi-monthly or monthly basis at developing legislation. And so you will see the product of three of those work groups, receivership, chaired by Mark Comstock, probate modernization, chaired by me, and criminal appeals project legislation that is chaired by Judge Bouchong. We get untold number of hours of volunteer service by lawyers, some of whom are the highest paid lawyers probably in the state in terms of their ability to command fees. And we get tremendous benefit of their expertise and input that they put into these Law Commission projects, which speaks, I think, to the quality of the product that we are able to provide. Another advantage of the Law Commission that we enjoy is that by statute, legislative counsel is actually directed to work with the Law Commission work groups. And so as we are working through a project developing legislation, we have the real privilege of working with a legislative counsel drafter in the work group, as a member of the work group, getting the benefit of hearing the discussion, the conversation, getting the nuances of what the work is, of what the work group is doing and deciding, and then being able to basically make that draft as the work group is going through. Tremendous benefit that we have with that kind of relationship with legislative counsel. Just a couple of other comments that I'll make. We have been the Law Commission originally was housed in the Judiciary Committees. It was staffed by the Judiciary Committees for the first couple of years. We really didn't have anywhere else to go. But it was felt and strongly felt that the Law Commission needed a touch of independence in the way that it works, so that it's not we distinguish the Law Commission from just another work group of the Judiciary Committees. And so in 2000, we put out a request for proposals to the three law schools to host the Law Commission and to serve as the place where the Law Commissions could work, where the staff of the Law Commission would be employed, and the home of the Law Commission. We received at that time proposals from the University of Oregon and from Willamette University. Willamette University was selected as the host of the Law Commission at the time. This year, we've had some changes, and I would say they're all very collegial and positive changes, and I'm pleased to report that we will be moving the home of the Law Commission from Willamette to the University of Oregon at the beginning of the next biennium. The University of Oregon always talked about the one that got away when their proposal wasn't awarded the first time. And so having an opportunity now 17 years later to be the host of the Law Commission, they have stepped up and have been very welcoming to us. So we anticipate moving the home of the commission to Eugene. That won't make it any more remote to the Capitol. We have the ability, through the gracious cooperation of the State Bar and through the other two law schools, to and frankly from the Capitol, to meet in a number of places around the state. Portland, including the bar offices, which we use. The Capitol, the Willamette, has offered us to use the hearing room that we have on their campus. And, of course, down in Eugene. And my hope is that by moving to Eugene, we may be able to bring into the Law Commission process lawyers more from the Lane County area and even further south that have found it difficult to participate in the Law Commission because of distance getting up to Salem and Portland. So I'm hoping we'll expand the reach of the Law Commission and what we do. We are funded by legislative appropriation. We are staffed by Laura Hansel right now is our deputy director. She's a full-time employee. We have had a full-time administrative assistant. And services of Jeff Dobbins, who is the executive director of the Law Commission. He's a law professor on faculty at Willamette University. He's had a part-time association with the Law Commission over the past several years. It's a small group, which limits the bandwidth that we have, but I like to say that we punch above our weight because I think we do big projects and do them very well through leveraging the use of the volunteer lawyers that we have who are experts in the fields that we are working in. I think I'll stop and turn it over to Laura and see if she has anything to add.
For the record, Lori Hansel, current title Deputy Director of the Oregon Law Commission. And first of all, I would just thank our chair, who has taken a lot of time out of his normal practice to come and help us out. And so Lane has been the chair of the Oregon Law Commission for 18 years. At the Uniform Law Commission, you get a lifetime appointment at 20 years, so we are hoping to he makes it two more years, and we will present him with a nice plaque to carry on that legacy. But just a couple of things to mention. First of all, the move to U of O. Willamette's been an excellent home for us for the last 16 years, so there will be a lot of planning into how to transition over. One of the goals is to be at a public university, a big research university, is to bring in more expertise, possibly from the undergrad campus, and hopefully trying to think of new and innovative ways to work with students. That's one of the things that I love that the commission does, is works very closely with both undergrad and mostly law students. So behind me to my right is one of our externs here today, Tyler Skidmore, who's a second-year student. We have another extern, Mackenzie Zook. I'll be bringing them all along when I meet with you individually to tell you more about our legislation. But it's something very special the commission does in training the next generation and getting students excited about civic engagement and legislation, an area that sometimes can be ignored in legal education. One of the things the commission does best is we really do work hard to facilitate a lot of conversations. So not only are we working on our own projects that help lessen litigation, help provide consistency in the law, clarity in the law, and we're always trying to make it more user-friendly to the layperson on the street using vocabulary that works for them. And so I think that we've come a long way on that front. And then apart from our formal work groups, a lot of times we're involved in just facilitating side conversations with other projects, answering short questions, offering small expertise to legislators when asked. And that's something else that I'm proud that we're able to do. And so I will meet with you again individually to talk about our three LCs we're bringing. We're continuing to modernize probate. That's been a project in the works for many years. Making that more user-friendly, getting rid of old, outdated language, making sure social constructions of today's day are maintained. And then the direct criminal appeals is a total rewrite of Chapter 138. Chapter 137, actually, I think. but what we're doing there is really taking a whole look at the body of law that makes up direct criminal appeals and trying to then put it all in one area of our code, organize, define terms, making it much more user-friendly right now. A lot of things are in case law or not contained in statutory law. It makes it very hard, especially for those that don't practice that area regularly. And then our final bill this session will be receivership. And what we're doing there is really creating a whole entire statutory framework for receivership law. So we've looked to the Uniform Act on that front and as well as to Washington law and to bring that to Oregon so that it both works here and across to our northern friends, to many folks practicing in both areas. I think that's probably it.
Just one last thing I would say. You will receive a report from the Law Commission. We do issue annual reports of our work, and it'll include the membership of the commission, history of our legislation, and the bills that we're introducing this session. And this session's, this year's report is going to be dedicated to the memory of Hardy Myers. Hardy was one of the original commissioners with me. I think I'm the only one remaining now. Hardy was on the commission first as Attorney General, and then when Hans Lindy, who was the governor's appointee, left and Hardy was done being Attorney General, the governor appointed Hardy as his appointee. And Hardy stayed on in that capacity until his passing last November. And he was vice chair of the Law Commission and chair of the program committee for, I think, all of the years that he was on. So a great champion of law revision, law reform, and just good policy. And we're going to miss him very much.
All right. Questions? So I'll make a couple comments. First, for those who do not know Laura, Laura actually was one of our counsels for judiciary. So it was very nice that she was able to land nearby and do the work that she's doing. I've always been impressed with the Law Commission, and I'll just say as Lane has suggested, we have a stellar group of people that make up that membership, with the exclusion of the legislators. They are just, I'm just awed every time I'm able to go in and see the top quality of the people around the state that are in the profession, that are willing to give back the profession. And my belief, one of the reasons we had the Law Commission established was because there's major projects that we just cannot do internally to the level that they need to have that type of scoping. Some of these go on for more than a year in work. So, I mean, this is something that when we ask them to consider different projects, they get back to us as to scoping it, whether they feel that they have the expertise to actually do the work. And they've turned us down on some because they just, you know, they want to make certain they have a good product. And so I've been very pleased with that. And Lane's guidance and direction has been superb. I mean, and then I look at for maintaining his private practice and the work he does, not only for the Law Commission, but the Uniform Commission on a national level, and many other things I know I don't know about that he does in the community. So, Lane, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And I also look forward to seeing the change of moving it down to Eugene. I know that they, as you said, were very anxious in trying to get it the first time it was open. With some direction changes for Willamette, this is an opportunity to, let's say, share the wealth, because whatever institution has it actually has to pony up, let's say, the space, the multiple resources. And so this is kind of sharing the wealth in a way, and I think it also will give a different perspective. And I agree with you that based on my service in the District 4 that does take in a good portion of Douglas County, I think you will see more participation from lawyers that are south of Lane County that will be able to make that drive when they're meeting there in Eugene. Any other comments or questions?
I just wondered if there was a bias there because Lane generally wanted more Lane County legislators.
We'll see. All right. Thank you all very much for the overview. I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on the overview of the Oregon Law Commission. I believe that completes our work for today. We're scheduled to be here tomorrow at 8:30. And please, as a reminder, on Thursday, I do believe we're starting at 8 o'clock. With that, we're adjourned. Thank you.